to this week's episode of Cork Food Stories. I am Clara Cooney, owner of Clara Cooks and the gourmet grocer, deli and catering services based in Riverstick in Cork. On this week's episode, I am talking to the wonderful Dervla O'Flynn, head chef of the well-known Ballymaloe House. We talk about her career as a chef and her diverse background and experience before taking on the head chef position in 2018. Her passion on creating the best team and providing a fabulous farm-to-fork experience at Ballymaloe House. Hello, Dervla. Thank you so much for coming in to the Red FM studio today, taking time out of your very, very busy schedule.
Thank you very much for having me on.
Not at all.
Great to have a change of scenery.
Exactly. You know, Dervla, I always, I studied as well in Ballymaloe Cookery School, a bit later than you studied in Ballymaloe Cookery School, but I had a completely different career. But I absolutely adore it down there. And I've been going down to Ballymaloe House. I say back into my childhood where we used to go down, actually with my granny and my mum, they loved it, going down for lunch there. And then, of course, you know, throughout the years and when I was down at the cookery school, we did indulge a few times in going over there.
Oh, you have to do that.
Students. Mm-hmm. Exactly. So that was great. But you have a long career before even you became head chef in Ballymaloe House. So you grew up in Dublin.
Yeah, I did. And there were no cooks in my house, really. Both my parents were academics. I suppose I would spend my time rather than doing my homework. I would be baking in the kitchen in our pretty crappy oven, baking cakes, making biscuits, trying to copy what my gran did. Actually, gran lived with us probably from when I was about 4 or 5. She moved in with us.
Wow. OK.
But she was a manager in Brown Thomas.
Oh,
and she in Dublin, and she used to walk into work every day. But at the weekends, she'd treat us occasionally to her Sunday roast, which was a beautiful braised brisket of beef. And she'd cook it in, probably it was water and a few herbs and things like that. But then we would have the lovely stock as our soup first. And then she'd carve up the lovely brisket.
Amazing.
And I always remember that. It was beautiful.
Yeah.
Mum and Dad used to have dinner parties. I don't think Mum really didn't really like cooking that much, but that's fine. She would make pâtés and things like that. And
delicious.
They'd have great dinner parties.
Not a lot of people know how to make pâtés.
And Dad made homemade beer, and which probably, you know, tipped them all over the edge of a little bit, and probably some cheap plonk or something. And but they had great fun with their dinner parties.
Amazing.
Yeah, we'd be hovering around.
And so obviously you had a passion for it, right? I think we grow up with it and we enjoy it. But what made you decide then to go to Ballymaloe? Because what you went to Ballymaloe Cookery School, what year was that?
Oh, 86, 87, yeah.
Was this a dream of yours, or how did you make that decision?
I had changed school when I was about 14, and I was great friends with a friend called Sarah Hogan, and her family used to come down to Ballymaloe on holidays. When she was 16 or 17, she'd come down for a summer. Doreena had a tiny farm shop then. And Sarah couldn't come down one year. And she said, I think I'd just finished school. And she said, do you want to go down and just for the summer and bake in their little farm shop? I thought, this sounds great.
Amazing.
Yeah. I'd say my parents didn't know what to do with me really anyway. So I said, I'll go down. And I fell in love with it straight away. I remember Rory O'Connell showing me how to prepare a leg of lamb with rosemary and garlic. And
because was he a chef there at the time?
No, he wasn't. Don't get me muddled up now. I can't remember. Was he at the time? He probably was, and he was still involved. He was involved in the cookery school.
Yeah,
I remember those first experiences and realizing this was fantastic. I really loved it. So I stayed then, and then worked for a little bit and did the course the following year.
So you were working down there before you even got to the course. Oh, that's amazing.
The course, so I had a real feel for it. And Florrie Bulger, who's still one of the main teachers. So she had started the year before me.
Oh, amazing.
So I worked with her that summer, and she was a great influence. And there was such a lovely atmosphere. And pottering down to pick strawberries and veggies from the garden. It was just, you know, it was heaven. It really was.
It is. It's idyllic. And I think, you know, when I did it as well, it was just so beautiful down there. Early mornings, the birds, the beautiful herb gardens.
Yeah.
Everything was there. I mean, you don't really need to leave the land because you can live off the land, you know, but learning about that to the next level. So back then there were still, this was the whole, I suppose, theory behind it, was teaching you how to live off the land as well.
Absolutely.
And use local produce. So tell us about, you know, you did the course, you did the 12-week course. and then you decided to stay on after that.
So Doreen offered me a job teaching, which was fantastic.
Amazing.
So I stayed for about 3 or 4 years teaching there. I think 1 year Flory might have been having one of her babas, and I stepped in as head teacher for a while, which was nerve-wracking, but brilliant.
I mean,
a great experience. I mean, we had the most beautiful projects to hand, but also Doreena was at the cutting edge and still is at the cutting edge of what's happening everywhere. So she would invite the most fabulous chefs over, Ruth Rogers and Rose Gray from the River Cafe, Anthony Worrell Thompson, many, many more, Marcella Hazan, like all these fantastic people who would
and
come
and still does
cook.
Every year.
Still does. Yeah. I mean, so they were a super influence on us all, and we got to work with them and open our minds to what was out there. So then we would go and eat in restaurants where friends were working in London and Dublin, and it was just great fun.
Yeah.
And I remember going to Chinatown for the first time in London and eating real Chinese food and having dim sum where there were 500 people in a restaurant, and the buzz and the sound and just soaking it all up.
We never
and
really
loving
had
it.
That in Ireland anyway, did we?
Not really.
You know,
I
got that experience actually when I lived in Melbourne. That Asian fusion and Chinese cuisine, it was everywhere. And my God, did it. Oh, your palate, wow. Just
absolutely
unbelievable.
Yes.
I had never tasted anything like it because we just didn't have it here, you know. That was amazing.
That was great.
You stayed on there for 3 years.
And I did a year and a half in the house at that point as well, actually. I went over to the main house and worked there as well for a year
fantastic.
And a half.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Was it, you were saying that actually, you were in the, was it the pastry section you were in?
I was
then?
In the pastry section then, yeah. And maybe starters, but a lot of the pastry section. And it was fantastic. I mean, Mrs. Allen was running the kitchen.
Wow.
It was,
what an experience.
You know, Rory was around, Doreena was around. It was really hard work and good fun and really busy. We used to run down to the swimming pool on our break instead of having cup of tea or a coffee or a cigarette or something. We'd go down to the pool, which was for the guests. So like there was great antics and great fun. We didn't have much, but we were on our low wages, but we had great
gorgeous.
Fun. We were all living in the country, going off to the pubs at night and the discos. And
that must have been an unbelievable experience working with Marshall Allen. Wow.
It was fantastic. And we all soaked it up and we all loved it. And we had a lot of locals, a lot of people coming in, a lot of locals and more so, who just wanted to work there. And Mrs. Allen and the Allens are Quakers, and their ethos is to treat their staff like they treat themselves. So there was a family table with the staff eating their breaks. It was all a lovely, lovely atmosphere. And Mrs. Allen would make sure everyone had their dinner every night. And that still goes on.
It still goes on.
I know. Our tea breaks are, you know, go from 8 a.m. to 10 p.m. The best staff food ever.
You even feel that in the cookery school as well. Mm-hmm. You know, they all gather together and all the staff and everyone eats together.
Yep.
But even the way when we all cook, when we, you know, we do our cooking in the mornings and everyone sits down for lunch together and eats the food
during
that
the course.
We just made during the course, which is absolutely gorgeous.
It is, but it's really important, I think, as well,
really
because
important.
The conversation about what you've done and what you're interested in. And I think even just for the students to connect at that point, like at the cookery school we're talking about, but even still, like in our working environment, it is very important to stop actually for 5-10 minutes and really just take a breath
and talk,
and realise, you know, your co-workers are all, you know, working as hard as everybody else.
Exactly. Absolutely.
You know, and interested.
That's fantastic. So you did that. And from there, then
I went to England for a year, actually.
Had you met your husband at this stage?
I had. I met him about 4 days after I arrived.
There you go.
Back in 87.
Cork man.
Yes, exactly. And he was a furniture maker, and he was going to Oxford to work in a lovely furniture school for a year. So I said, well, I'll go too. So I went to work in a little gastropub in the country in Oxford. It was beautiful. But it did make me also realise the influence Ballymaloe has out there. I mean, yes, I'm there all the time and obviously I work in it and I realise how great it is. But I went off to England and we had obviously a few connections through my work. But I ended up in this little gastropub and I realised what good projects I've been working with, really what good training I'd had. And I ran the kitchen for them for the year with them.
Amazing.
So it was great fun.
So you were bringing your teachings, that what you'd learned over...
Over to there. And it
to
was
the country gastro pub
absolutely.
In Oxford.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah. And then I went back to Dublin for a year to work for Johnny Cook, who had come from California. He's Irish, but he'd gone off to California for about 10 years and he was bringing back CalMed food, Californian Mediterranean influenced food.
Wow.
And he was determined to bring it right back to and use the sunny vegetables he'd been using over there.
Yeah.
So he was at the time, which isn't maybe what we're trying to do now, we're trying to use as much local, but he was importing lots of beautiful veggies from Spain and from France. Mm. So we were dealing with beautiful produce and he just felt like we should cook these simply and just showcase them, which is kind of where we're all at now.
Same ethos, yeah, yeah, exactly.
But it was fun. It was a fun restaurant to work in. He was a great cook, actually, but we had, you know, some stirs coming in because it was the place to eat at the time. So that was always a bit of fun. But it was busy, busy, busy and making beautiful focaccias and, you know, working with lovely fresh fish. And he was a great sourcer. That's what Johnny was fantastic at. He sourced great food.
That's amazing. So you stayed there for a couple of years. And Ivan, that's your husband's name, isn't it?
No, Sasha. Ivan is my brother-in-law.
Oh, sorry.
Sorry, Sasha. Sasha's my husband.
So Sasha was in Dublin with you, obviously.
No, he was back in Cork.
Oh, was he?
And then he said, I'm buying a house in Ballycotton. Are you coming back or what? So I said, okay, right. So we bought a beautiful house in Ballycotton, just on the sea. And we lived there for about 10 years.
Sure, it's beautiful down there.
Oh, it's stunning.
Like those walks down there and even how Ballycotton has actually changed over the years. And there's some beautiful places to go to eat as well. And now they have the church, isn't it?
The Sea Church.
It's a music venue now.
Yeah, it's great.
It's fantastic, yeah. So are you still down in Ballycotton? Or
then we moved a little bit more inland, but only 5 minutes away.
Oh, yeah, lovely.
Yeah. Yeah, we had a bit more space.
Not leaving East Cork, that's that.
Oh, no. Still have to be close to the beach, you know yourself.
So you obviously came back.
I came back, yeah.
And tell us then about your journey coming back and what was next for you.
After working in the city in Dublin, it was kind of thought, right, I would kind of love working in the city still. So went to work for various people. I worked with Beth and Harold, Beth Houghton and Harold Lynch.
Amazing.
And they had their Harold's restaurant in Douglas.
Amazing,
and obviously they've moved on and on and on, but worked there for a while with them. So I worked then with O'Flynn Construction, who were opening a restaurant at Dean's Hall up by St Finbarr's Cathedral. And I ran that for about 4 years. And that was great fun.
Proby's restaurant.
Proby's Bistro, yeah.
Bistro, yep. Yes.
Exactly. And then I got married and I wanted to open my own little place. So I decided to run the cafe at Meadows and Burn, just on French Church Street.
Oh, wow. Okay.
For Frieda Hayes for a year. And that was a great experience as well. So
oh,
it was
wow, yes.
a small venue of my own. So I said, right, that was what
that
I wanted
to
do.
Was it called Meadows and Burn? Or did, no.
It was. Yeah, was I it called it Food Etc. at Meadows and Burn. That's what I called it for a year. And then I had my first child and I had somebody else running it. So I realised it was a bit too awkward and expensive to have someone else running it for me.
Yeah.
So I came back home and did a lot of private catering.
Yeah.
Which was great, and cooking for cafes and cooking for other restaurants.
Absolutely.
Which was a great little money earner.
It's still very popular to this day. And
absolutely. You're doing it yourself.
I'm doing it myself, exactly.
Yep. And then I went back down to Ballymaloe to work with my mother-in-law, who owns the Ballymaloe shop at Ballymaloe House, and helped her with the cafe there. And then as the kids got older, I was able to run it. So I ran the cafe for about 8 years.
Fantastic.
And yeah, it was great.
Now, I have it right in saying it was your brother-in-law set that up, was it?
It was.
So it was Ivan set that up.
Ivan set that up, exactly.
Well, that must have been an experience because that's a beautiful little cafe.
I suppose
that's where most people, they go to the grounds for a walk and they have a look in the shop and
exactly.
they go down the back.
They feed off each other,
exactly.
You know, the shop and the cafe feed off
Absolutely.
Each other.
Absolutely. That's fantastic.
And yeah, it was great fun. I loved it. I love working front of house and, you know, cooking as well. It's
getting
lovely
to see the customer as well as being behind the scenes. Fantastic.
Absolutely.
So you did that for 8 years.
I think it was 8 years on and off. I mean, Tara, the manager now, she's running it. She was there all the time as well. I mean, she's a fantastic person who's been involved all along as well. So yes, there were a few of us kind of in and out of it. And then there was an opportunity to go back to the house and the kids were a bit older. So it was a good time. So I went in 5 years ago in that snowy January.
Took on the position of head chef.
Yeah. And I was a bit unsure of myself at the time. I thought, really, am I ready to be a head chef again? So I kind of just worked my way into it and worked with the existing staff who are great. And they've all been, half of them been there, you know, for a long time.
Yeah.
and we kind of all work very well together. And then every season we take on, like everywhere else, you take on new staff for the busier times.
Yeah, of course.
You know, so there's a core staff, and then we would always take on, if we can, students from the cookery school. We're very, very fortunate to have that.
Yeah.
And it really helps with sourcing staff, you know, putting the feelers out.
Because a lot of students, even like I did my course back in 2019, and a good few of them went on to do experience working with them after with yourselves after the course. A lot of them did even Saturdays or the weekends, because I suppose most, the majority of the people with the cookery school have come from abroad, to be fair. Like, I think we only had maybe four or five Irish people in our course.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, the rest were maybe a bit more. But the rest were, there was English. We had people from New Zealand, from California, from Germany. You know, it's global.
It's very global.
And so they're around. I mean, I was on the farm Monday to Friday, but I went home for the weekends. But they, you know, they were around. So they, a lot of them were getting the experience, I know, and going down to the cookery school. So you've got that, because you've got those trainees coming in and...
Absolutely. So currently we would take a student for work experience most evenings.
Well, yeah.
Four or five nights a week, the students come after class.
Yeah.
They'll come at 6 o'clock and they'll come in and we'll give them a copy of the menu, because the menu changes most days.
Yeah.
And they will, they can stand and observe, but generally we get them in helping opening oysters or plating up a simple salad or boiling sorbets for a little starter. So it's a really good influence. And then we can just let them stand in the pass and watch the dishes go out and watch how the whole system works. And we really have a nice kitchen. There's no shouting or generally bad feeling. I mean, everyone helps out. The kitchen porters, the chefs, we all, the waiters, we all work together.
Yeah. And I've been through the kitchen and you can sense that straight away. But I think it's great as well that people get the feel of the kitchen to understand if that's what they want to go into, because there's so many different avenues to go after Ballymaloe Cookery School, of course. So you were talking there a little bit about your menu changes daily, which is rare. It doesn't happen a lot.
No.
So tell us about that, and, you know, what's, you know, the thought process behind that, and why do you do that, and how do you keep up with it all?
Mrs. Allen would have done it historically because I suppose she would be getting the fresh fish from the boats in Ballycotton and she would see what her son at the cookery school had on his garden and what her own gardener had at Ballymaloe Garden, which we source a lot of our vegetables from on a daily basis, whether it's Swiss chard or we've just finished the artichokes and the asparagus, and there's a little bit of a gap now, but we're just waiting for the peas and the broad beans. We're so lucky, and the cucumbers coming on. So I think Mrs. Allen would have written the menu for that reason. It was, the menu was smaller then as well, but she would have wanted to use everything that she could get as fresh as possible and not waste anything.
Absolutely.
So if she had fresh lobster on yesterday that had just come in, today she might make it into a little potted pate, so that nothing gets wasted and it's just as perfect.
Amazing.
You know, and yesterday she might have had Swiss chard on from the garden and today she needs to use it up for something else. So she might put it into a sauce for a fish. So
fantastic,
it would vary.
Isn't it?
So we kind of would do use the same ethos. We would try and perhaps leave about a half the menu on following from one day to the other and then change the fish and the meats as they come in.
What comes in.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And really, because I suppose because we're a hotel, the customers might be there for 3 or 4 days and it's just to keep them excited about the menu.
Oh,
and
yeah.
We would always see requests, rightly or wrongly. if a customer said, is there any way I could have a starter as a main course, or, you know, vice versa, we would always allow that because we don't pre-portion everything in such a way that we can't be flexible.
Yeah.
You know, everything is coming in.
I love that. And
you do your ordering early in the morning, so you kind of get the best. That's the
idea
as well.
You get the best, exactly.
Yeah.
So really it's kind of like early morning, you're going, okay, this is what's going to be on the menu this evening.
Mm-hmm.
So as I said, it's quite different to a lot of kitchens out there, a lot of restaurants out there. So how do you work through that with your staff? Saying, right, okay, so yesterday we did this and today we're doing this, you know. Is it challenging for you to do that?
Yes. And I think it's challenging for the chefs. And the more organised you are, the better. And that's what you're always trying to be, is to have the menu written ahead of time so everyone can come in and try and start their work as soon as possible. It usually takes us a good half an hour, nearly an hour some days, to source what we have and use what we have when it needs to be used. And the menu needs to be finalised through the day, generally. So
wow.
It is a lot of to-ing and fro-ing. The dessert menu is made on a weekly basis because it's a trolley. It's a little bit...
The famous trolley.
The famous trolley,
That's been around for a long time, hasn't it?
It has, absolutely. And J.R. is in charge of it now, J.R. Ryle. And he's just brought his new cookbook out last year, which is fantastic.
J.R. is fantastic.
Absolutely.
And, he's very passionate about that dessert trolley as well. And I saw everything going on with him bringing the... He's got a cookbook called Ballymaloe Desserts, if anyone doesn't know about it.
Yeah.
But he's done a bit of a tour around the world.
He's
promoting his book. How fantastic for him.
And he's done great pop-ups. He was in the States in January and February and did some pop-ups recently around London. So he's really enjoying writing, and the book has been a great success. Yeah,
it has. And if anyone hasn't been down to Ballymaloe House, the dessert trolley, I mean, you always have to make sure you leave enough room to indulge in what's coming at the end.
Absolutely.
Because the dessert trolley comes out and you can say, I'll have a bit of this and I'll have a bit of that and maybe a side little bit of that, a one spoonful of that.
Absolutely. So that's up to the savoury chefs, us, to make sure we don't fill you up too much beforehand.
Yeah.
You know, so portion control is important.
But I like that. It is important. But for me, one of the things is I love your zero waste concept around making sure that you don't waste any food. Like you were saying there, if you make lobster one day, you're making a pâté the next day with what's left of the lobster. You make your bisques and your stocks and
absolutely
all that. And that was one thing for me that I really learned, and I brought right into my business. My waste is so minimal as well. I just, you know, I don't over make stuff. I don't like to do that. I don't like to throw things out.
Yep.
But we use everything, including making our own stocks inside in the kitchen. But, you know, there's a lot of restaurants you'll go to and the menu is huge and the food portions are massive. And I know, you know, if I'm sitting there eating, I know at the end of the day, a huge percentage of that food is going out into the bins.
It has to be. Yeah.
So it's nice to see that, you know, and anyone who's gone to Ballymaloe, this is one of the things you, it will be drilled into you. Dorina drills it into you. We waste nothing. And it's one of the best, I think, teachings I got from the course, and understanding what you can do, you know, with the food as well.
But, Absolutely.
How do you, I suppose, you know, you've new chefs coming in, so you need to teach them this, because not all of them have done the cookery school. Some of them come from different areas. Some of them have come probably from different restaurants where they had a different setup there. So how do you instill this into the business and into your team?
I suppose it's been a little bit more challenging recently in that we have had a few chefs come from abroad and they're good cooks and chefs.
Yeah.
It's important to showcase their talents, but also to express that it has to be cooked in our way. It's not just a specialised way. It's really just about how we like to cook things and as simply as possible to show them off. For example, if you have asparagus that's just been picked, which is quite unusual, like compared to picking up a bunch from Peru in the shop and having
100%.
It picked, to instill in them that that's the importance. So just let's poach them really simply and even either serve them with the hollandaise or just even a little bit of a whipped local ricotta from Macroom, or some salad leaves and a few little cherry tomatoes from Waterford we're getting at the moment. Something simple, very simple, to show off the best of the produce. And that often takes time because, for one thing, they may have been used to using produce that wasn't the best quality and they might have had to be overcooked or, you know, had a lot of work done to them in order to make it look pretty
and taste better.
But that's one of the main challenges we would have on that front. But generally, they want to come to us because they know about us and they know about the produce. And like one of our biggest challenges, I would say, is when you're cooking for main courses, because generally you have to be quite traditional to a point that you are probably using a protein, for example, like you're using, and we only use local meats and local fish. So, for example, my choice might be our own farm pork, which is super lovely, free range ducks and quail I get from Middleton free-range chickens from Ballycotton, yep. some venison from Killarney Park. It's very limited, okay, and lamb as well, from lamb and beef from local as well, from East Cork and Cloyne. So making stocks, like you were saying, have yep. to be so important. So your sauces have to be delicious.
Yep.
Using your trimmings to make something a little bit fun on the side of your main course.
Yep.
And maybe giving people two beautiful vegetables when the season is right with your protein, with your meat or your fish, because that's what you really want to show off.
Exactly. You and know? I think people appreciate that.
The vegetable has to sing as well.
Because you've got the most beautiful walled garden there.
We do.
And it's fantastic. Just fantastic.
Yeah.
And it just has so much of the most beautiful seasonal food.
Absolutely.
If
people don't understand, like a walled garden really is, it's a little haven because it's generally sheltered. The walls are warm, so we grow peaches on the walls.
Yeah, amazing.
And figs, and this creates a little microclimate that allows the vegetables to flourish. And we the beautiful artichokes and the herbs and leeks and
yeah, it's fantastic.
Whatever,
it is absolutely fantastic.
And we mustn't take it for granted because we're very lucky to have them. I use a couple of local suppliers as well. Kilbrack is another organic farmer yeah. I use. He's in North Cork.
Yeah.
And a friend of ours just started in Ballyandreen, which is only 10 miles away. And he has just planted himself a huge tunnel for fun, so we'll get vegetables from him as well.
Just for a bit of fun.
He has actually, because I think he doesn't need to do this, but he's loving it.
Yeah.
And he's delivering to me once a week. So it's really befriending people who are interested in what they're doing. And obviously all the cheesemakers like Gabine and Duras and Malines
yeah.
and McCroom.
We've so many.
We've so many. If I'm not mentioning anyone,
yeah.
you know, we appreciate them
and
all.
And of course, you've your own raw milk from the farm
do,
as well.
Absolutely. And yogurt is on our breakfast buffet
beautiful.
Every day.
Yeah.
The yogurts and the milk and the cream. We're so lucky in buttermilk.
Which is fantastic. But I mean, it's taken many, many years to build to this, you know. And I suppose for you, you've come in where you have this around you. You have all this produce around you, which is fantastic.
Yes.
I'm sure, you know, was the walled garden, when did that kind of come into Ballymaloe? Was it there for a long time?
Yes, it's been there a long time. Yeah. And there's always been various gardens. We've had a fantastic gardener. Mags Coughlin's been there for a good few years, I'd say. She's super and she works it by herself and then takes on interns in the summer, helpers in the summer, but she's there tirelessly with her dog every day.
Yeah.
Yeah, working
and you
away.
Had, there's one down in the cookery school as well. Well, it's not more so much a walled garden. It's the garden where all the herbs and...
Absolutely, and yeah. I guess the hedging
fantastic.
Kind of protects it.
Oh, the hedging protects it,
yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, and Doreen has a lot of gardeners because, I mean, she has the glass houses
she
and
does.
She has... her maize and she has the herb garden. I mean, the gardens at the cookery school are stunning
yeah.
as well.
But even at, you know, when we were down there and we might say, come on, we'll do a big feast on a Sunday, and just to be able to walk down to the garden and get all our herbs. It was, you know, it's precious to have that there.
Yeah.
I actually had an allotment out in Blarney in a farm called the Hydro Farm.
Right.
Do you know that, this
no,
farm?
No, I don't.
It has gorgeous history there. It used to be kind of like an old spa kind of. Charlie Chaplin went there. Yeah, Winston Churchill went there. It was where they used to go to wind down, chill out, relax, get away from their daily lives or the public eye or whatever, you know. And that had closed down and been taken over. And the woman who took it over, she was amazing. She set it up more so that for people who... maybe people who kind of had gone through a bit of mental illness in some way, or maybe people who had come out after, you know, of prison or anything, that to give them something to look at or to do. And she set up all these allotment areas and people used to come and spend days there just therapeutically starting to grow their own veg. And yeah, I had an allotment there throughout all of COVID. It was amazing.
That is fantastic.
It was fantastic. And I grew so much stuff. And actually, I just kept trying. Let's see if this works.
Yes.
But the soil was a big factor out there as well, because the pH balance of the soil was amazing. So it did tend to kind of work very well. But a lot of people had their own glass houses. And I think it's something more and more people are doing, even at home now.
Mm-hmm.
They're growing their own vegetables in the garden. And it's definitely kind of got a little bit more progressive over the last few years.
Absolutely. We went to a friend's house for dinner. I was off on Saturday night and we went to a friend's house for dinner and she put down her own artichokes and she'd made a tiny bit of hollandaise, and six of us sat around and ate our artichokes, and a couple of us hadn't, well, I had, but because I'm a chef and I should know, but a couple of people hadn't had them before, and they were fascinated. It's a really simple thing, but
it's amazing
just to
though.
Sit there. We were in the sunshine sipping yeah. wine.
Come from your own garden. Yep. Yep. How bad.
And then know? I am gloating now. So then somebody had also delivered her the first mackerel
oh.
that had just been caught, and yeah. we threw them onto her fire, and it was quite heavenly, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
that's delightful. So the local suppliers, you talked a little bit about them as well. I mean, you couldn't have what you have without them.
No.
And I think this is the thing. I think a lot of people don't realise the amazing produce we have around us locally. We don't need to be bringing anything in, really. You can find what you want out there if you go out looking for it.
Yes.
But even people in, you know, in houses and stuff at home, you know, I'm always trying to tell people, go around, find the farms, you know, look for seasonal farms that are selling produce on the farm, or find out where you can get your Irish stuff, because, you know, it tastes different.
It does.
You're also supporting
The grower. A family, maybe.
A family.
Yeah.
It's not just, you know, going into the supermarket and filling up the trolley.
We probably are fortunate as well that at least when you're in Cork, you probably aren't too far from the country.
Exactly.
Wherever we go. So you can probably hopefully get maybe free range eggs if you want them, or your few
totally.
Spuds.
But should they're everywhere now, and you just drive around and you've got the signs outside, free range eggs here.
Yeah.
You know, so
honesty boxes.
Honesty boxes everywhere. Yeah. Exactly. And I think that's gorgeous. I love that as well. That's amazing. So how many staff do you have now down there, Dervla, in the kitchen?
About 13. Some are part time, but at the height of the season, about 13.
And are they from the area? You said you had a couple of people who have come in from abroad. So do you provide accommodation for them?
We do. We have a staff flat, and we also have some cabins that we have on site. And we've just bought a house outside the estate about a mile away, because it's really important now to have good accommodation for
That's people. Fantastic.
Because we are in the country, you have to attract people, because maybe they want to go and work in the city where it's a bit more fun. So it's important to provide nice accommodation. And a lot of them don't have transport. So we give them a bike to cycle up and down. and, you know, if they can team up together to get a taxi into town, you know.
They kind of build their own little family and community there.
We really, there's a nice buzz at the moment, because there's some lovely front of house staff that have come. There's some Canadians, Venezuelans, English, American, Irish, lots of Irish again.
Amazing.
There's a lovely mix of people.
Do you find that... we all know that there's a lot of people who talk about the hospitality industry and find it hard to get good chefs.
Yeah. Do you really want me to go into that?
Yes.
I've been avoiding it. We're on a positive day.
I think it is important to talk about it, because it is difficult.
It is difficult. It is difficult. We closed in January for a month, and I interviewed quite a few people. And I think out of it, I got two chefs, and one of them just started a couple of weeks ago, but he's moving on because he just found somewhere closer to home. And I would like not to use agencies where possible. I like that people come approach us if possible, because they know of us, or they want to come and work with us because they know what we're about. Because sometimes with the agencies, you may get applicants from people who just want to maybe come to Ireland or come to an English speaking country. And they don't know much about where they're coming to. And it doesn't always work out.
Yeah.
Because they really just want a job. They're not really that into cooking as well as we want them to cook.
Yeah.
But it has been difficult, yeah. People have come and gone a lot since even this season.
Yeah. And I think everyone's finding that.
Yeah. But I am getting a couple of people applying just in the last week or so who've been with us before.
Well,
so I do think if the
back.
And if the environment's good, hopefully people who've moved on will say, okay, look, I'll go back for a season. And sometimes that's the best you can get.
But I suppose you
season
did that
is
too,
fine
if you look at that.
Yeah, totally,
exactly.
Yeah,
I think
great to get for them to get experience anyway.
Yeah,
and bring it back.
I think when you're a bit further out, because you're out in the country, as you say, that's why you provide the accommodation, which is fantastic. But you're right. Some people realize, I don't want to be this far out. I want to be, and if they don't have transport, it's even harder for them again.
Yeah.
And
but we try and attract it attract people by saying, look, you'll get great experience with the produce we have, and we allow them to go to the cookery school. Not allow them, but we have a deal with the cookery school because we bring their students over in the evenings that any chefs can go to the cookery school and sit in on the demos. I was at a demo 2 weeks ago. And like, you never stop learning.
Never, ever stop.
Rory was filleting fish and he's fantastic at demonstrating anyway. Oh. But there was a guest chef, David Tannis. He used to be one of the chefs in Chez Panisse.
Yeah.
So he was down. Fantastic. You know, watched a demo with David. And all our chefs have access to that, which is a lovely plus.
It's a lovely plus. You know, I think you're right, though, as what you were saying. You want people to come to you because if they know what you're about, you know, they're going to be passionate. I want to go work there, you know, which is the main thing. I've seen certain businesses go through so many chefs that at the end of the day, some of them didn't, you know, survive. It was just too difficult. Yeah. The turnover of staff and the hours that they ended up having to put into themselves. So they just had to change direction of where their business was going.
Sure.
And of course, I think a lot what happened, and I know we don't talk, we don't want to talk about, you know, through COVID, but when a lot of the restaurants and a lot of the places closed down, a lot of chefs went down a different road and got different careers. And I have some chefs that work for me that have other roles. They don't work as my employees. They come in when I'm doing private parties or some extra catering, and they love getting back into the kitchen, but they have found other careers now. They've left the full-time chefing career.
Yeah.
They don't really want to go back into the kitchen on a full-time basis. They're enjoying their work-life balance. They've realised what's out there.
Yeah, because it is a stressful environment.
It's full on.
You know, and things can go wrong, and a good chef is a chef who can maybe fix a problem.
Absolutely.
That's just happened.
Yeah, absolutely.
Your sauce is split or your meat is burnt and you need to, you know, work out what to do very fast.
Yeah.
And you have waiters and managers looking at you wondering, the customer is waiting on the other side. So you have to manage those situations and be calm. And it is a stressful environment.
But for you yourself, so you've been in chefing for a long time. How do you manage the work-life balance? What do you do?
I tried to climb a mountain yesterday. It nearly killed me. But there was a lake at the end of it and I went for a swim.
Oh, good.
Hang out with friends. Boring as it sounds, we all know it, but going for a swim in the sea.
Yeah. We love it.
Just trying to not work on the day off and be organised so that everybody else can get on with the job when you're not there, I guess. But I do love cooking on my day off to a point. My husband is a fantastic cook.
When Dervla arrived this morning, she bought me flapjacks that she already cooked this morning. So, hey.
No, yesterday.
Yeah, she cooked them yesterday, sorry. So I'm thrilled to be having them with my coffee later on this morning.
Reading cookbooks, may I say.
I love that too, actually.
And I think I've been trying to say to the young chefs who are with me this year that could you spend maybe half an hour, take any of the cookbooks that are in the kitchen. The kitchen is falling down with cookbooks.
Yeah.
Take them home, look at them. It's different from looking at Instagram, which is really a fantastic outlet as well. But pick up a cookbook by a good author and look at their book from 5 years ago.
Yeah.
And you're looking at their cookbook because they can cook. So therefore, what they were doing a while ago or will trigger something, you know, that you might look at the ingredients you have there and think of something else to do with it, or just be inspired by that as well.
Yeah.
And I'm really trying to say it to them. Here, take this book home. Maybe I just need to.
But it is. And play around with recipes.
Play around with recipes.
Remember the library over the office in the Ballymaloe Cookery School. And we all had access to it. So everyone could go and take as many books as you want to go home and play with a couple of recipes. After I did the course, I stayed on for a bit of work experience. I asked Doreena, could I get a bit of experience, and she said,
good,
yeah, no problem, which was great. So it was kind of like just assisting the teachers and helping the chefs with the demos, but also doing recipe testing with Doreena, which I loved. So we'd get one of the cookery books and look at a recipe, and we'd change it a little bit, you know, or we'd cook it that way, and then we might change it to make it a little bit different, I suppose, to suit palettes today or just to change a few little things. And it was amazing. And one thing she said to me, which I will always take with me, is test it and test it and test it till you got it perfect before you put it out there.
Absolutely.
And never put a recipe out there unless you know it's perfect.
Yes, because I think a lot of cookery, some cookery books perhaps don't do that.
But that also gave me an insight of what really goes into a very good cookery book, because it's not just somebody writing a recipe. It is the amount of work that goes into it beforehand and testing it out. All the imagery you have to do to go, you know, to make it look lovely on that cookbook.
Absolutely. Because I worked with Rachel on a couple of her books too, testing recipes. And I loved it too. It's gorgeous. It's great fun actually. But really, those cookbooks are still books I refer to. Rachel's early books and Doreena's, all the books, but I still use them again and again because they are tried and tested and you can trust them.
Oh, you can definitely trust them.
Totally.
Any
trust
of their
them.
Recipes, absolutely. And
Rory's books.
And Rory's books, fantastic. I have a good few of them. But I also think, you know, it's not just the Irish cookery authors. There are some amazing cuisines out there and amazing cookbooks out there.
Yeah.
And it's getting a bit more experimental with those as well, you know?
Absolutely.
And I just think, you know, Valley Malou, just it has that for the chefs, as you said, here you go, read some books. I'm sure you've got, they've lots of choices. They can play around at home and come in with ideas to you, no doubt.
That's the idea, yeah. And we can even just make them for staff lunch someday. And then before we know it, it could be on the menu next week. And then then they also feel like they're adding their part to the kitchen, which is really good for their morale, and you know, the other chefs will compliment and we'll all enjoy it. And
absolutely. But I think you're right, because as a chef, if you're not learning, or if you're not learning outside, if you're not playing with food outside, or you know, trying to teach yourself outside of your day to day environment, you're not going to expand your own knowledge from,
absolutely,
you know.
Yeah.
And it's amazing what you can pick up on, or what you know, comes in front of you. And yeah, I love it.
And also eating out.
Eating out.
We have great restaurants in Cork at the moment, don't we?
We have amazing restaurants in Cork. There are some fabulous ones.
Yeah.
What's your favourite?
Oh, I'm scared to mention in case we forget any. The Glass Curtain.
Love it. Brian's amazing. Yeah.
Goldie.
Yeah. Fantastic.
Cafe Paradiso.
Oh, yeah.
Miyazaki.
Yeah. Gorgeous.
Nell's.
There's one. Have you been... Have I said this to you? Have you been down to Wild in...
No, but I'm dying to go.
You need to go down there. Yeah. It's gorgeous.
Could have done that yesterday instead of climbing the mountain,
oh,
but I'll do that next day.
Yeah. I think you'll need to book in advance, right? But that's beautiful as well. But there is so much. And
the English market, we're so lucky.
Yeah, we're very lucky in Cork. So what's your plans for the kitchen? Is it stay as it is, keep going with the flow? You know, you're experimenting and changing everything every day anyway, as you said, you know, so it's a fantastic kitchen to be working in.
We're very lucky to have freedom. We do have freedom to do what we like within the Ballymaloe ethos. But we pull on the old, and we would then introduce new on a small basis. It would often be tweaking, you know, with what we have, not necessarily a full change. And if the new chefs come in and have new ideas, as I said, we can try them out. And I'm very happy to put new things on the menu. So Ballymaloe changed a little bit in the last few years from, you know, in a few ways. We now have a non-family member as the manager. She's the second. Her name is Laura Bean, and she's doing a great job. She's been in for a year.
Brilliant.
So she's working on getting the front of house redecorated, up to date, and promoting us as much as possible. And we work well together in terms of ideas for the kitchen. We would like to physically change the kitchen when we can, or hopefully next January or the January after, just to make it easier for the chefs to work from, and also for different sections to work together, which would be fantastic. Because right now it is an old building, and it's been added on as the years go by.
Yeah.
So different sections can feel disjointed. So we're really looking forward to that physical change. And various things like we have our sausages back on the menu, using the pork from our farm.
Gorgeous.
Again, just always trying to use as much produce as we can, as locally as we can. I mean, that's my job. That is the job. My name's at the bottom of the menu. That's what we need to do, is stick to Mrs. Allen's ethos, which we all learnt, the core people who are there, and follow through as best we can. And she would have always been experimenting. So it's not like there's ever a feeling that we have to just use the old recipes. She was always travelling.
Great,
And coming back with ideas of, and wondering, what can I do with Madder Jeffrey's Indian lamb curry with my lamb and my yoghurt? So there was always innovation going on.
I think that's absolutely fantastic. And tell me a little bit about who or what has been your inspiration?
Oh, a good few people, I guess. Johnny Cook was.
Yeah, amazing.
When I worked with him in Dublin. And obviously Doreena was. Doreena and Rory. They would have been the people I would have looked to see where I could go and what you can achieve. So they would have been the people that would have influenced me a lot. My husband.
Of course,
he's
yeah.
my best supporter.
Yeah, which is fantastic. You need that in your life. Yeah.
No, he is. And absolutely. He's a fantastic cook himself.
And you won the award, the Food Ireland Award, didn't you? About
six, we did.
Not so long ago.
No,
a couple of months ago.
Yeah, it was.
Amazing.
Which was really nice, actually. And it was a lovely event to be at because it was the first one since pre-COVID. So got to meet some lovely people. And Anna Hall was there, who runs a lovely restaurant called Myrtle in London.
Oh, yeah, lovely.
And she won a lovely award. And Doreena won an award. And yeah. just various other hotels and restaurants we met. It was really, really good to meet up. And lovely to get
well,
that award.
It's fantastic.
Yes.
Dervla, I think it's absolutely amazing what you're doing, you know, managing such a beautiful kitchen and bringing fabulous food out to the restaurant, you know. And I would recommend, if anyone hasn't been there, get booking. You need to go down and just even experience the land, have a walk around, get there a bit early.
Sit outside, have a drink.
Outside, have a nice cocktail for yourself, exactly. And, you know, go and enjoy it. You know, just to finish off, I suppose, Dervla, if you were to give anyone a bit of advice, and anyone who's maybe thinking about getting into the world of chefing, what would you say to them?
I would say aim high, pick a job that is going to challenge you a little bit, and you never stop learning, I think. You can, even if you're having a bad experience, if you go and work somewhere that's quite hard and it's the days are long, you will definitely learn what to do and maybe what not to do. But do follow what you like. I really feel, even through my kids now, my advice would be do something you want to do. If it's not for you, then find something else. And it's hard to find it sometimes, but do something you really want to do or you won't put your heart into it.
Absolutely. And, you know, it is true. Follow your passion. And, you know, I can put my hand up. It took me later on in life to actually change mine and follow my dream and of food. But it doesn't matter what age you are. You know, if you
sure
if,
it doesn't.
No, it doesn't.
Of course not.
So, you know, if it's something you want to get into, there are beautiful places to go and learn.
Yes.
And, you know, and I agree with you, Dervla, go aim high and go to the places you want to work. You know, go and apply to those. There's plenty of jobs out there.
Yeah.
And if you've got the passion and you want to do it, it'll work for you. So
they're the people that stand out, I think.
They
if
are.
You come if people come to work for me and they mightn't necessarily have the skill yet, but if you can see that they really want to do it, and they have the passion, you can take them on.
Well, look, this has been wonderful. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
I think people you can follow, the Ballymaloe House has a lot of social media, of course.
Yes.
Do you do your own social media yourself?
My rubbish one, I do. Whenever I remember to.
Exactly. So.
No, we have great people working on it for the house itself.
Yeah, for the house itself. And I think anyone who's been listening, if you ever, I'm sure Dervla would be happy to talk to anybody who might be interested in getting into a career of chefing.
Of course.
A very open kitchen there. And I know when we went down there, you were busy. I think we got there and you were preparing for lunch, but you were still there chatting to us all. You put the tools down and you came and talked to us about, you know.
Well, you see, some of you might be potential chefs, so we
have to do that.
Yeah.
But everyone, thank you so much. Thank you to Red FM for the production of this podcast. It's been an absolute pleasure talking to Dervla, and we will chat to you again in a few weeks with our next guest.
Thank you, Clara.
For more Red FM podcasts, go to redfm.ie/podcasts.